What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about the potential for legislation on climate change in 2020. We'll speak with Representative Sarah Copeland-Hansis, who's a member of the Climate Solutions Caucus, as well as Barrytown Representative Rob LeClaire and Matt Cota of the Fuel Dealers Association. We're planning another show soon with activists pushing hard on climate change and hoping that the legislature goes even further than the Climate Solutions Caucus is willing to go. But one of the reasons we're not focusing on the climate activism today is because there's a group of protesters actually on the steps of the Statehouse as we go live in the noon hour. They're demanding action on climate change from the governor and from lawmakers. They chose a very cold day, but a day when there are likely to be lots of people at the Capitol getting ready to hear Governor Phil Scott deliver his second State of the State address. Climate change is on the minds of many Vermonters, and as we heard in our shows at the Statehouse earlier this week, it's also a priority for many lawmakers. Since many of the activists on climate change are using their voices and maybe in a little while even their pots and pans to advocate for significant legislation, we're not going to go in depth with them now, but we will in a near future show. So stay tuned for that. Today we're going to talk with two lawmakers about what they think might be feasible for passage in terms of legislation in this second year of the session. The two lawmakers joining us today are Bradford Representative Sarah Copeland-Hansis, a Democrat and co-chair of the Climate Solutions Caucus. It's nice to talk with you today.
Thank you for having me.
And Barrytown Representative Rob LeClaire, a Republican and not a member of the caucus. It's a pleasure to have you with us today as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to start by mentioning a report that the Agency of Natural Resources put out this week looking at Vermont emissions data. And there's some good news, or relatively good news at least. Greenhouse gas emissions from 2015 and 2016 declined by 4%. That's the first time in 5 years that Vermont saw an actual greenhouse gas emissions drop. And the preliminary estimates for 2017 and 2018 show that the total emissions continue to decline. Now, the flip side of that is that we are still significantly higher than 1990's emissions levels, 13% higher than 1990, in fact, and well above both the 2012 target the state set and our future targets. And to hit our targets, we're likely going to have much more aggressive action in the sectors where there are the most emissions. But I'm curious to start us off today what that report says to both of you. Representative Copeland-Hansis, let's start with you.
Thank you very much. The report of the emissions data really says to me that we have a long way to go. And despite the fact that that there was a small decline, we are actually looking at data that is from 4 years ago. And so the
does that frustrate you that the 2015-2016 information is coming out now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how we can plan for a way to reduce our emissions if we don't have access to timely, accurate, and actionable data. And the fact that we had to wait 4 years for that data to be produced really begs the question of whether the appropriate level of focus and intensity is being placed on this by the administration.
Are you buoyed, though, or cheered by the fact that emissions are, it looks like, starting to go down?
In the face of the monumental challenge that we have with us, ahead of us right now, no, I'm not. I'm not satisfied a bit. There are systematic changes that we need to make and help Vermonters with in order to put Vermont in the right direction. These are challenges that other states around the country are grappling with right now as well, in many cases not achieving their objectives either. But we have a crisis ahead of us, and the science is clear. We have a very limited amount of time to make a very hard correction in the way we power our economy.
Representative LeClaire, what about for you? What does this report say and speak to you about?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, I want to congratulate Sarah on the fact that she has been diligent about championing several causes, and a couple of them are somewhat controversial, but of course most change can be controversial, and I respect that and her efforts. And I do share her concern about the fact that the information is older, and it would certainly be better if we could get more current data. If we're going to be talking about making significant changes to our lifestyles and basically how we live, the more current information we have, the better. But obviously, the fact that those numbers are heading in the right direction is very, very encouraging.
When you say it's very, very encouraging, does that suggest to you that, hey, we should do more now to get those numbers to go down faster and farther? Or does it say something different to you like, hey, it's working, back off, we're good on what we've got?
Well, I guess it depends on what you consider the more to be. I and most people don't have any problem with doing what we can voluntarily that's reasonable for folks. We all love the planet. The whole climate change discussion, honestly, it's not really a partisan issue. You know, we all want fresh air. We want clean water. We want a healthy planet. We love our families. We care about other people. It's a matter of what's it going to take and if we could have that conversation and what can we do voluntarily based on data, seeing what's worked, what hasn't worked, and have a plan going forward.
What do you mean by voluntarily? Because isn't the legislature wouldn't the legislature be voluntarily making decisions? I mean, there are different levels of voluntary, whether it's coming from, Paris Climate Accord, which we're no longer a part of, whether it's coming from the federal government, something that the legislature could say, this is what Vermont is doing. Or do you mean individuals making individual choices?
The way I look at it is if we have a mandate coming out of Montpelier, I wouldn't deem that as being voluntary. But things like, you know, I'm more looking at rather than having some sort of a punitive measure, you know, give me some different choices here. For instance, like our cars that we're driving today are much more fuel efficient. We're driving fewer miles. There's been emphasis on weatherizing our homes. We've got heating systems that are more fuel efficient. There's, I think, a variety of different things that we can do. Take a look at them, have a conversation about them, whether it be, you know, in the transportation sector or what we need to heat our homes.
Let me read some of the comments that have been coming in advance of the show, because a lot of Vermonters are really keyed into this issue. And what we've heard from lawmakers who sent us recordings of their priorities, your shared priorities this session, is that climate change is a big issue for everybody at the moment. Lynn in Williston wrote in to say, on climate change, we must act boldly. Our house is on fire. The Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg has used these words, but now we see the flames in photos and stories coming from Australia. Just as the frame of a house will collapse under fire, so too will ecosystems. Countless animals have died in the Australian fires, and those that remain will have a hard time finding food and cover. Unlike a house, ecosystems cannot always be rebuilt. Here in Vermont, we don't feel the heat of the Australian flames, but let's not be fooled. We have rising rates of tick-borne disease and face the increasing occurrence of heavy rainfall events. Nearly all of us know someone who's had Lyme disease or whose life has been impacted by flooding. We are already feeling the impacts of climate change. Swift and dramatic action is necessary to avoid the worst impacts. Megan in Milton is a doctor who supports climate action. She writes, as a family medicine physician with a special interest in this topic, I believe that climate change is one of the biggest public health threats of our time and our children's time. Now, Megan supports the carbon reductions of the proposed Global Warming Solutions Act and writes, if we push for and pass this law this year, we will be investing in becoming more resilient and avoiding emotional and physical costs down the road. I see climate-related impacts on my patients. The increased extremes in weather affect my lung and heart disease patients' ability to breathe. Extreme heat in the summer makes anyone with a chronic medical condition more prone to an exacerbation or accident as a result of their illness. Vermont and Maine lead the nation in rates of Lyme disease. Even in winter, I have patients voicing concerns about the effects on themselves or their loved ones. The anxiety of climate change has our youth feeling hopeless. We need to tell legislators that it is imperative that they act. And Chris from Jericho says, whatever we do, we must make sure actions taken don't disproportionately affect the poor. A carbon tax that increases the cost of gasoline or heating oil would more strongly affect a low-income family stuck with their gas guzzler and leaky old house than someone who can afford to buy a hybrid vehicle or insulate their house. I would rather see measures put in place to bring low-income Vermonters to a point of being able to drive more efficient vehicles. And, you know, we were talking earlier about how right now at the State House there's a protest going on as we're live here in the noon hour, and it was a little slow to get started. But John Dillon, one of our reporters, went out to talk to some of the people who are protesting and see what it looks like. And they had promised to make noise, but at first the sound of the demonstration was actually silence. This day, protesters dressed in red to symbolize the blood of species dying from climate change. They marched silently toward the State House, and there they joined dozens of others who promised to raise their voices to call for action on climate change. Here's one of the protesters who traveled from Windham County to join in the protest today.
My name is Maria Ogden. I'm from Putney. I'm here today in front of the State House because I feel that the governor has not addressed the climate crisis, and all last year was sort of a fruitless session. I know that there are a lot of legislators in there who are trying really hard to get to act and to get the climate caucus worked really hard all summer. I want the governor to hear us and to hear them and to begin to recognize the emergency state we're in.
Some comments that we've been hearing from people who are thinking about this issue and thinking about it really prominently right now. Sarah Copeland-Hansis, you co-chair the Climate Solutions Caucus. Are you hearing similar things from Vermonters as you go around the state?
Absolutely. We had a series of about 20 meetings in different communities around the state. We touched on 10 different counties, met with over 1,000 Vermonters, and many of the comments that you have shared from listeners are exactly what people are telling us out there. Folks are engaging in this with an intensity and with a sense of urgency that I haven't seen in the past. And I feel obligated to continue to work on this and to continue to probe with my fellow Vermonters how we solve these challenges.
So what is the caucus suggesting or supporting in terms of legislation that you either want to put forward this session or are already looking at and supporting?
Yep. So we have four banner priorities and would love to just touch on them really quickly. The Global Warming Solutions Act really is kind of foundational to everything that we need to do going forward, because what it does is it takes the greenhouse gas reduction aspirations or targets that we've had for a number of years, and it puts them in statute as requirements. And that's the first step, I think, to helping us really focus our attention and resources on creating ways that help Vermonters move away from our reliance on fossil fuel. I want to come back for a moment to your statement about Paris, because even though President Trump announced that the United States would begin the process of pulling out, our governor, Governor Scott, reaffirmed Vermont's commitment and was lauded by folks around the state for saying, no, Vermont means it. We are going to meet our Paris climate goals. So the first target that is in place in the Global Warming Solutions Act is to say we will meet our 2025 target. The other thing about the Global Warming Solutions Act that Vermonters should understand is that this puts us in alignment with our neighbors. New York and Maine passed Global Warming Solutions Acts in 2019, and Massachusetts has had one on the books for over a decade, and they're working on a revision and a reassessment of theirs now. So this isn't putting us anywhere out in front by any means. In fact, we're jogging at this point to catch up. But it is foundational to demanding that we come together and figure out how to do this. The other priorities of the Climate Solutions Caucus, one of them is really focused on workforce development around building trades. We know that we need to do more in the way of weatherization and efficient heating systems in our buildings. And to do that, we need to focus on workforce development and make sure we have enough frontline workers who are really educated in building science to do that.
Before you go to number three, let me just read you a note from Tim, who writes in on that topic and says, we need to re-incentivize solar for residential and business customers. Vermont has steadily reduced incentives while simultaneously allowing utilities to roll out double-digit rate increases. In the meantime, the federal tax incentive for renewable energy installations is stepping down starting this year. We also need to change building codes to support the installation of electric car chargers in our homes and businesses to promote electric vehicle adoption. Let's think out of the box and design programs that benefit a broad cross-section of our people.
go on.
And weatherization and building efficiency does benefit all people. It benefits our environment by reducing our reliance on fossil fuels, but it benefits your own family budget by keeping more of your heating dollars and increasingly cooling dollars in your own bank account.
Yeah, and Enrique comments on that too, and from Middlesex, saying, I'd like lawmakers to boldly reform Vermont building code. Current upgrades that will take effect in September of 2020 are 70% short of what could be achieved in heating and cooling energy in our buildings. New buildings that will require weatherization from day one will add to the colossal challenge of weatherizing the existing stock.
Absolutely. And when you talk about buildings, you're talking about baking in 100 years worth of emissions. And so we need to stop doing the wrong thing. Otherwise, we'll be stuck with it for decades, as Enrique points out. We also need to recognize that in our transition away from fossil fuels, we're going to be needing to electrify our heating and transportation sectors. And when we need more electricity, we need to make sure that that's renewably generated. And we want to focus on prioritizing in-state renewable generation. When we keep more of those dollars in state, they are keeping Vermonters on the job, and they are circulating in our communities, in our Main Street businesses, and that just makes all the sense in the world. And then the final priority of the Climate Solutions Caucus is to make sure that if the Transportation and Climate Initiative, this 12-state plus Washington, D.C., regional cap and invest system goes into place, we want to make sure that it works for Vermonters, that it works for folks in rural communities, folks who don't necessarily have access to public transit, and that that we in Vermont prioritize those investments to make sure that low-income Vermonters and folks who have to travel long distances for work are able to do that in a renewable way.
So, Representative LeClaire, you've been listening. There are four pillars. There are four sort of essential pieces of this, and I was reading some comments in between. I'm wondering where you see areas that you agree on and where you see some pushback. I mean, presumably, for example, the Global Warming Solutions Act, which would mandate Vermont emission standards that are our goals now, does not follow along with your voluntary approach. But where do you see areas of compromise?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first one is the fact that, again, we're not disputing, or I'm not, that we have climate change. We have.
So you're not disputing the science, is what you're saying?
Oh, gosh,
the science
no.
Behind
no.
Climate,
I don't,
changing climate.
I don't think most people are. I think where the major concerns come in is to what some of these proposed solutions are. You know, like the weatherization and things like that. You know, we had a bill before committee, actually, or charter change, where a community wanted to go through and have the ability to mandate retroactively upgrading older homes and things like that. Well, what does that mean to people who are here? And going back to the original comment about that the data that we're working from is 4 years old, I'd really like to get more current data so that we can take a look and see, have the things, some of the things that we've done, have they had the desired results? Is there more opportunity there? Some of the things we've done, if they haven't made a difference, let's take a look and try something different. You know, this whole thing, we're talking about more and more electrical use, which I totally support. Why can't we get our electric rates back down to the point where we can afford to heat our homes and our workplaces with it? It's one of the few resources that we have out there that arguably right now you, I think, could make a valid argument that we're able to create more electricity right now than we can use. We just don't have the ability to store the excess efficiently and reintroduce it into the grid when we need it. Let's take a look at those things first, voluntarily.
Well, let me ask you, Steve wrote in to say it was short-sighted for Vermont to force Vermont Yankee to close. The state is exporting the consequences of our lifestyle. It's okay to ask Quebec to dam their rivers to generate power, but we can't dam any rivers for hydropower. It's okay to ask New York and Pennsylvania to hydrofrack to get natural gas, but heaven forbid we build a wood chip plant in southern Vermont. How do you respond to Steve?
I totally agree with Steve. There's a lot of things that we can do. You take a look at the Lowell wind turbines. There's 21 of them up there, and the last number that I heard is they're about 32% effective because either the wind isn't blowing or the grid can't take the power when they're generating it. Well, let's take a look at increasing our grid's capability, doing what we have to do to harden it, to deal with the weather events that we know we're going to have, and take a look at what we do have for in-house capability before we end up going outside. But you're right. We close Vermont Yankee. What do? We get power from Seabrook. Plus, you know, I know this will be somewhat controversial, but if we're really concerned about this climate change and it is the emergency that it is, how do we take the discussion of nuclear totally off the table?
We got a note from Scott, I believe. Let me find it. We've got so many notes, I can't even find them all. Yeah, Scott, who writes in that lawmakers should realize this is not the most important issue in Vermont at this time. Work to make Vermont affordable and business friendly. Work on making the population less dependent on Montpelier. That's Scott's perspective. But Irvin says, I appreciate the countless hours the Climate Caucus has put into coming up with legislation to address the climate crisis, but I feel the latest iteration still doesn't go nearly far enough. Are you open to strengthening these bills to include emissions goals that reach 100% renewable energy by 2050, a ban on any new fossil fuel infrastructure, and stronger specifics for a just transition? And let's go to Donna, who's calling in from South Burlington. Donna, go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My comment has to do with, you know, I keep looking at my electric bills and the efficiency utility charge, which is essentially a tax. It keeps going up. And I don't understand the sense of using those charges to reduce fossil fuel, because it's making electricity more expensive and disincentivizing people like me from buying hybrid or electric cars and using a high efficiency heat pump, because it's just going to increase my electrical use. And you know, that's not, I think, what the efficiency charge was really intended to do. It's an easy place to go for money, but it is a tax, and I just wish that, you know, the legislators would consider taxing fossil fuels if that's what you are trying to save.
So, Donna, when you say you think legislators should think about taxing fossil fuels, are you saying you support something like a carbon tax that would add cost to a home heating oil or add cost at the pump for filling up your gas tank? Because a lot of Vermonters say, whoa, I can't handle that.
Well, it's going to affect a lot of people in a negative way. So I don't think you can throw a big tax at them right away. But, you know, kind of you need some incentive to get people to do these energy efficiency projects on their homes. Because, you know, but if it ratchets up over a few years and gives people time to, you know, put aside the money and decide, it's like, okay, well, that energy audit I had 5 years ago, maybe we ought to actually do something.
Yeah, Donna, thanks for your perspective. I appreciate that. Representative LeClaire, let me come to you on what Donna's saying, but also on this question of, you know, if you believe the climate science, and the climate science says that we're in crisis and that it's only going to get worse unless we take really drastic action as a country and as a world, then, you know, do sort of voluntary initiatives go enough, far enough, and do this sort of carrot approach go far enough? And to Donna's point, you know, people need to feel the pain perhaps before they're going to take action.
Well, again, I guess it depends on what you consider the drastic action to be. For instance, if you want to talk about the carbon tax, which I believe you'll find is very unpopular with most of Vermonters, because it's going to make living in Vermont even that much more expensive, there's some major concern out there. So once again, if we can sit around and talk about what the real solutions are, like I'd said, why can't we get our electric rates back down there to where we can afford to heat our homes with it again and actually use it in somewhat of a quantity type of scenario? You know, one of the things about Efficiency Vermont is their main focus for many years, and maybe even still now, is just to reduce our electrical use. Well, honestly, that's sort of contrary to where we're trying to go now, just as a society, whether it be our vehicles or – geez, you walk around in your house to go get a glass of water in the middle of the night. You don't need to turn any lights on because with all the LED lights and stuff. You know, they have a budget of $60 million. Maybe we should take some of that money, reallocate it towards some of these things that we can do to help reduce our use of fossil fuels.
I want to go to Matt Cota, who's waiting on the line with us. But just briefly before we do, Representative Copeland hands us this question of a carbon tax. Are you supportive of that? Is the caucus supportive of a broad scope carbon tax?
So when we set about to work over the summer to establish a platform of things that we wanted to do in 2020, we very intentionally wanted to focus on things that we knew we could have a chance of passing in 2020. And what that meant is taking a look at the landscape that we're in, the governor and the House and the Senate leadership, and really, you know, trying to ask ourselves, what can we do that is fundamental to reducing our emissions going forward that will pass in this current landscape? And, you know, the governor and both House and Senate leadership have been very clear that they do not support a carbon tax. And so that was not one of the things that we supported exploring this summer.
Now, you know, some people are saying that the Transportation Climate Initiative is a carbon tax just by another name. And I think one of the people who may have thoughts on that is Matt Cota, who's with us right now. He's executive director of the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association. Matt Cota, nice to talk with you today.
Well, thanks, Jane. Nice to talk to you, too.
So what do you think, as a representative of the Vermont fuel dealers, in terms of what the climate science is telling us and how your members are going to need to participate in any action that the legislature takes?
Well, absolutely. We need to participate in any action. It is very important. But to put it in context for the listeners, you know, we have been on this path since 2015, since the Vermont Energy Act of 2015 that was signed by Governor Shumlin, which really changed the dynamic. Rather than in a position of reducing electricity consumption so we don't have to buy more power and build more plants and buy more poles and wires, we started on a process of increasing electricity consumption in the thermal sector and transportation sector. That's why these incentives that we're seeing for electric heat, for electric cars, for car charges and batteries, you know, that's government working. That's public policy set about in 2015 working, reducing emissions by convincing homeowners to move to electric heat and to use electric cars. So we're seeing that process. We're seeing a decline in sales because of that. We know that this is the path forward. Our issues with this all-electric policy is that it doesn't serve all Vermonters. You can't plow Vermont roads in an electric car. You need a diesel-powered truck. You can't move milk with electricity. You need a diesel-powered tractor-trailer. And more than half of Vermont homes.
Is that now? For now, you still need that? But could we see in the future where you actually could do that with electric vehicles?
Well, we have an urgency, which I understand. There's a climate emergency, and we have an urgency attached to that. But would we, if we pass the Global Warming Solutions Act, let's get beyond the bumper sticker here, Jane. I mean, what would happen in 2025 if the Global Warming Solutions Bill became law is that the state of Vermont would be forced by law and lawsuits to take swift and decisive action. Well, what does that is? Let's name it. Swift and decisive action could be the banning of the installation of any heating system that uses combustion, that combustion is fueled by fossil fuels. We're talking about stopping plowing the roads with diesel trucks, what we rely on to keep those roads clear for anyone to come to Vermont or move around Vermont. We're talking about the 15 million gallons that is paid for by taxpayers through fuel assistance to keep low-income Vermonters' homes warm. Would we take swift and decisive action to stop those deliveries of life-saving heating fuel because we're compelled under a lawsuit created by the Global Warming Solutions Act? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about swift and decisive action. Now, for some of the people outside today, that may be exactly what they're talking about. But let's name it. What do we have to do in 5 years if we don't meet those emission goals? And some of them are pretty drastic.
Well, so let's put that to Representative Copeland-Hanzis. If something like the Global Warming Solutions Act was to pass, now Matt Cota, representing the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association, says, what does that actually mean in terms of the swiftness of action that we'd have to take by 2025 and what that might mean for the people who heat their homes a certain way, for our municipalities? How would you see the solutions part of that Solutions Act working in that way?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that every month, every year that we delay beginning down this road makes it harder to get where we know we need to be. And I would also just point out that I think Vermonters know intellectually that the internal combustion engine is not necessarily the height of human ingenuity and that we will be able to develop the technologies that are necessary to get us on the right path. And that will include heavy-duty electric vehicles.
By 2025?
No, not necessarily. But unless we're sending a signal that that's where we want to go, we're never going to get there.
And Matt Cota, I mean, from your perspective, there is a lot that the Fuel Dealers Association is going to just have to deal with. But there's a lot of also maybe heel dragging, or maybe a way of saying, wait a minute, this is going to impact our own business's ability to survive. And so you would necessarily not be in favor of some of this work. Doesn't make it the wrong thing or the right thing to do, though, right?
But, Jane, it is pushing us in a direction that, frankly, we haven't been before as an industry. I mean, you have an industry that in September, an oil heat industry that has devoted itself to figuring out how to become 50% renewable by 2030 by increasing the amount of biodiesel currently blended into our supply. You know, this fuel is used predominantly in the Northeast, and we have a real ability to blend renewable diesel and renewable biodiesel into our supply. It's how New York City is meeting its climate goals. That's how California is meeting its climate goals. We can do it here regionally, and we can continue to using the same furnaces and boilers that currently use oil heat by using a renewable liquid fuel.
That's Matt Cota, Executive Director of the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association. Matt, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
Now, again, this is a conversation that's ongoing, and so I certainly hope that nobody will think that this is sort of the last word on the subject. But Representative LeClaire, you get the last word for today anyway. And let me ask you about the Transportation Climate Initiative in, 30 seconds. Yesterday, Senator Tim Ash said that he's concerned that there could perhaps be a negative impact in terms of cost for Vermonters even if we don't join the Transportation Climate Initiative, but that if we don't join it, we won't see any of the benefits. Are you looking at that issue this session and trying to make a decision on whether you support it or not?
Well, certainly it's much easier to make an informed decision if you have a lot of information. So obviously as more of this information rolls out and that we have to work with, we will. But, I maintain that let's incentivize rather than penalize. We all want to do the right thing. Like I said, we love fresh air, clean water, the earth, but there's a lot of things that we can do, I believe, voluntarily to get us where we all agree we'd like to be.
All right. Well, we'll continue to look at this as the session progresses and as the year progresses. Barrytown Representative Rob LeClaire, thank you very much for talking with us. And Bradford Representative and Climate Solutions Caucus Co-Chair Sarah Copeland-Hansis, thanks very much to you as well.
Thanks, Jane.